Well, y'all, guess what?
What?
Ellen and I are going to be back on Broadway next week.
Yes, on 8th Avenue in Ripley Greer Studios. I can't wait.
Listen, it's Broadway adjacent, okay? Just roll the music and we'll tell you after the music. Jesus.
And welcome to I Think Not, the podcast where we try and reclaim our former life glory. I am Ellen Marsh, and that is Joey Taranto.
The podcast where Broadway is an Arby's on 8th Avenue between 40th and 41st Street.
It's a geographical location. There are very few shows actually on Broadway. I was in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert at the Palace Theater. That was on Broadway. Everything else is not really on Broadway.
Yeah, a technicality. However, hey, listen, if 45th Street can be Broadway, so can Ripley Greer on 8th Avenue. Y'all, we are doing a reading of Working Girl next week, and we've done one before, just you, me, and Lena Hall, and we were asked to do it again next week, and I'm so excited because that was the last time we got to play together in a room in that way. And why does play together sound so dirty?
Because you're disgusting. No one else thought that until you said it. And now everyone is visioning us mashing our pissers together.
It's pride.
You all, when the casting director called me to pitch it to me, she goes, Joey's doing it. Number one, as if we're just a package deal in life. And number two, as if I didn't already know what Joey is doing and I know his whole calendar. At this point, we should just merge Google calendars, but then I would see all your hookups and I would probably post it on social media when I get stoned. Welcome, everybody. We're fine.
You think I put my hookups in a... Who's got the time? They're all in one place and I think you know where it is. Say it on the count of three. One, two, three.
Your bedroom.
Grindr.
Oh, the gym. The gym bathroom. A sex club. Am I close? A gay bar. The corner. The 7-Eleven. The handicap bathroom in the Arby's.
A Staples. It's fine. It's fine.
The envelope section of Staples. You all, hello. We're so glad you're here. We are an actual podcast. Please don't turn us off. We're very needy. Have you got tickets to our live shows yet? You all, we're going to be on tour. I'm a very self-deprecating person. I'm the first person to call myself out and say that I am an imposter and I don't deserve nice things. Our live shows are really fucking fun.
They are a lot of fun, and it's a great way to connect with more members of our community. So if you want to know if we're coming to a city near you and how to grab a ticket, all you have to do is go to ithinknotpod.com, click on See Us Live, and it's all there, babes. We got it all. Thank you, Harris.
All courtesy of Harris. Truly everything we do is courtesy of Harris. And you all, we've had a lot of questions about our Apple subscriptions. Now remember, Apple subscription is just another way for you to listen to our bonus content. If you're on Patreon, you don't have to do anything. You stay right where you are. These are for the people that are like, I don't want another application. I totally get that. I delete apps all the time. I'm like, why do I have a reservation app from that one time I was in South Carolina? I have no idea. We get it. So if you listen to Apple Podcasts, Apple subscription is right there. You're going to get all that bonus content. $5 a month gets you 4 bonus episodes, your 3 episodes that we cover, and our true crime adjacent. It's really easy. It's in the app, but we had a lot of people asking, do I leave my Patreon? What do I do? Patreon, stay. This is for the people that, you know, don't want to paint and watch movies and all that fun stuff. So I hope you're enjoying it. And then if you are sitting there and thinking, what bonus content is she talking about? You can go to patreon.com and we have all kinds of tiers, all kinds of goodies. You can sit in on our recordings. You can get swamp talk. Again, I'm kind of going to brag about us. We got a lot of bonus content. I bragged about us twice in like 2 minutes.
It's okay. And listen, if none of that is for you, that's okay. We're glad you're here and we love you.
I'm going to balance it out. I got a big forehead. There you go. Now I feel like we're in balance. All right.
Get to the episode.
We are covering the curious case of, and y'all, this one's a doozy. I have a feeling a lot of you are going to know this case, but listen anyway. Season 1, Episode 5, The Curious Case of Jody Hildebrandt.
This is a story about fractured faith. Mormon families in southern Utah are flocking to a high-profile therapist.
People don't understand that they could actually heal their pain.
She made it look like only the best of the best got to have her therapy.
With an unconventional approach to healing.
There wasn't any aspect of the human condition that she couldn't pathologize and turn it into an addiction.
someone could be addicted to having sex with a lamppost.
Like, what the heck is going on here?
When a high-profile vlogger enters the picture,
how do you mother six children? Well, Ruby Frankie will show you how.
If you cut one more thing in my house, I'm going to cut its head off.
An unexpected alliance takes shape.
There was financial attraction. There was emotional attraction. She was sleeping literally in the same bed as her client.
And a call to 911.
This boy has been, he's been detained.
Unravels their bizarre beliefs.
Adults have a really hard time understanding that children can be full of evil.
What the heck is going on in the LDS faith?
Everything you're sharing to me just sounds like a horror.
Well, we are in Salt Lake City, Utah, and we meet a man who don't even bother to give us an introduction, not a name, not even a nickname, but these are the first words out of his mouth.
I had discovered as a 13-year-old kid how to masturbate in the tub one day. Thought it was the greatest thing.
Sir, this is a Wendy's. The only Frosty we want to hear about is the kind that comes out of this there machine, okay? This is my first impression of you.
Isn't that funny when someone comes up on your For You page and you see some ridiculous bonkers video and you're like, this is my first impression of you. Do you want to take it again? Should we start over? This man is really sweet. He actually has a tragic story, but he's a wonderful, wonderful man. I find it strange. We are in Salt Lake and we are neither talking about the housewives or the Mormon wives. There is not an hombre extension in sight. So I feel like a fish out of water right now.
I feel like I've earned this break. I need a little break. You know what I mean?
Honey, everyone's so happy. We're covering season two of Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. You have come to love it. Just tell the people. Be honest for once.
Oh, I have. And I'm on Mom Talk. I'm getting not actual Mom Talk, but I'm getting clips. So I already know that Demi is the new villain.
I can't believe you found your way to Mom Talk. Is Mom Talk ever going to survive this?
Oh my God. Anyway.
They're like, the gays found us.
Anyway, this man's good time with masturbation came to a screeching halt when his bishop at church told him that masturbation was a sin. And I'm like, never stop me. I'll never listen to the Pocahontas soundtrack again the same way. And that's all right.
Was that ever expressly laid out to you? Because
yes,
Catholicism lay worst. I know that. Mm-hmm. But nobody ever said that to me. Those words were said, like, you can't pleasure yourself. How was that posed to you when you were a kid in the church?
We had it in youth group, where the youth leader had all the boys in a room and started talking about masturbation and saying
they
that it was a sin.
The and boys one of and the girls.
Yeah, and one of the guys in the group was like, bro. And this man didn't give a shit. Like, he was about that life. And he was like, bro, don't act like everyone in this room doesn't jerk off. I don't care what you say, everyone does. And that youth group leader turned 50 shades of red. It was quite uncomfortable. And here's the thing. You know, every religion, it has its good side and it has its bad side. I know some very kind-hearted, good-hearted Christians. You know a ton of kind-hearted, good-hearted Catholics. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that there are these people who weaponize it or vilify things that I'm like, you are turning something that is totally natural into something that should be feared or that you should feel shame over. And that's in this case where it gets really dark, because this man's bishop basically said, if you have lust in your heart, it's akin to adultery. Masturbation is akin to adultery. And adultery is the same as murder. That's a lot for a 13-year-old boy to wrap their head around. Jesus.
When they said that, I was gagged. I have never heard that before. And I have said many times on this podcast, I am very familiar with the Mormon religion. My ex was an ex-Mormon and he taught me a lot about it. I actually find religion fascinating just because it's so wild. I'm like, really? Jesus said that? That's funny. Okay. But I had never heard the adultery is akin to murder before.
You are setting people up for failure because you're talking about an instinct that God gave you, if that's what you believe in, right? Or whoever it is. Your sex drive is a part of who you are, and to shame someone who cannot help it, it's really insidious. I'll tell you, I wrestled with my own shame and guilt for a long time. Thank God for therapy, but there are plenty of people who never get therapy, who are stuck in that cycle, and also people who can't afford therapy. It's a terrible thing. Anyway, we finally get this man's full name.
My name is Adam Paul Steed. I was raised in the heart of the Mormon church. I was taught to pray every single day that I would get married in the temple and that I would go on a mission.
And he was a former client of Jody Hildebrand. We also meet his dad. And his dad loves two things.
Yep.
His Jeep and his son. That's all you need to know about this man. He's talking about this 1946 Jeep that he's driving. It takes about 6 minutes of the episode. I was like, someone is a car aficionado in the editing room.
I was like, this man wrote it into his contract, driving around this tin can.
Well, he explains that he raised all his kids to be perfect Mormon boys. He wanted them to be Boy Scouts, which we later learn is pretty much goes hand in hand with the Mormon church. And then he explains that a lot of people leave the Mormon church. And he said for a lot of reasons. We know a lot of Foremans.
Yes, we do. We were on Broadway with them.
A lot of Broadway Foremans. Gay guys who were like, I'm just a dancer and this is my girlfriend Nancy. No.
Yeah.
Sorry, Charles. You're gay. Come to Broadway. We accept you. But yeah, there's always a demographic of people who have left a really strict religion. We know a lot of them. Joey, guess what?
What?
This episode is brought to you by IQBar, our exclusive snack sponsor. IQ is the better for you plant protein-based snacks made with brain-boosting nutrients to refuel, nourish, and satisfy hunger without the sugar crash. That was a mouthful. Hi.
For those of you who don't know this, Ellen and I are in a throuple with IQBar, okay? We are in a very serious relationship. We're getting ready to go on tour, and we are stockpiling IQBar because whether you're on a plane, a train, an automobile, whatever it is, IQ Bar is your best friend. It's easy, on-the-go snacks that you can pop out your purse, or in my case, my fanny pack, don't judge me, and get some quick protein that tastes delicious and just happens to be healthy.
You all know I love IQ. I kind of consider myself a little bit of an expert. I think I have tried every flavor. I just got a new one, caramel salted chocolate chip, but I am always partial to my favorite lemon blueberry. And IQ Bar is free from gluten, dairy, soy, GMOs, artificial sweeteners, and their DBs.
IQ Bar has over 20,000 five-star reviews and counting. Everyone is goo-goo gaga for IQ Bar, including my sister Jessica. She won't shut up about it.
And of course, their hydration mixes. I am literally standing with my mug right now at my computer full of my hydration IQ in mango. And right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus get free shipping, my favorite.
To get your 20% off, text THINK to 64,000.
Text THINK to 64,000.
That's THINK to 64,000.
That's 30. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. And when you see us on tour, ask for one. I'll have it in my purse. And so Adam continues to tell us about the summer of 1977. Nope, 1997. Very different.
Could you imagine?
Rick plays, you can tell by the way I use my walk, I'm a woman's man.
He was like, picture it. Summer of 1847, West Virginia. And I just want to say, in 1997, I was 17, and I thought that one day me and Jennifer Love Hewitt would date. I think I just basically laid out why I'm gay. Just being in love with Jennifer Love Hewitt made me gay. And that's our show.
How did that work out, babe? Did you ever find her or do any finger banger or anything?
So in 1997, Adam attended a camp called Camp Little Lemhi. And he tells us in real time that he absolutely hates that place now. Whatever good memories he had of it are now dead.
My first thought when he said that was, how do you hate camp? I want to go to camp, going and playing games and doing arts and crafts, and we're adults, we can be high. Oh, that would be so fun. A camp with weed, going out in the wilderness and hanging out with people and making God-size and friendship
sweetie,
bracelets.
Sweetie, my love, I love you so much.
What?
You are a blessing from God.
What?
But Lemhi, it has nothing to do with weed, my love. This was a summer camp for children.
No, but any camp can have weed. We're adults. Adult camp can have weed. Wherever you
got
go.
It.
Listen, if you were to start a camp, you'd probably call it Can't Be Bothered. Could you imagine Joey as a camp counselor? And he's like, hi, welcome to Can't Be Bothered. There's your tent. There are the showers. Here's the arts and crafts. Here's a bag of weed. You throw it on a garbage bag full of weed and you're like, leave me alone. And you just leave.
You're on your own.
We never see
Good luck.
You again.
Y'all, we're cracking jokes now because This is true crime, and it does get dark
from
here.
Thank you for acknowledging we do true crime. Thank you. I appreciate it. I feel like that was for me.
In case you didn't know that.
The Boy Scouts of America is inextricably woven into the Mormon male experience. As early as 1913, the LDS Church outsourced its boys and young men's program to the Boy Scouts of America until 2020. When Adam was growing up, to be a Mormon boy was to be a Boy Scout. But for Adam, the Scouts would have a major impact on his life, and not in a good way.
So this camp was for Boy Scouts of America, and Adam was 14 at the time. Well, this poor baby tells us that he was repeatedly sexually assaulted by one of the leaders of this camp. And when he learned that this was happening to other kids, he found the courage to tell the adults in charge, which that alone says a lot about him, because at 14 years old, that takes a lot of bravery. But what is horrifying is that no one did a thing.
Yeah, they listened to him. They're like, oh, that's nice. Now go make some necklaces out of tree bark and dead bugs. See you later, Adam. They did zilch. And again, speaking to his bravery, he knew this wasn't right and nobody was taking care of it. This kid went straight to the police. And finally, that Boy Scout leader got arrested. Thank fucking God. But to your point, how amazing that he came out. And I'm sure he helped so many other people who were survivors of this man and future victims as well.
Yeah. But sadly, the Boy Scouts did their best to cover this up, because let's be real, they've had years of accusations and scandals that they've brushed under the rug. But finally, at 23, Adam was like, I'm not letting this go. I am determined, because I don't want other boys to have to deal with what I dealt with. So he sued the Boy Scouts of America in 2007. And of course, they settled out of court.
Of course they did. Covered that right up. So then we fast forward to 2008, and he goes where every good Mormon child goes to college, Brigham Young University. And that's where he met a young lady. Now, this is really the story about how it goes at Brigham Young. You can't have sex until you're married. So a lot of young people are like, hey, I like you. I like you. Do you want to do sex stuff? Yeah, let's go to the temple and get married. They have a very young marriage rate there. My ex and his ex-wife got married at 20. They went off, they got married, and they came back to school married. I knew 0.00 married people in college. People barely stayed together for a month and a half. And at BYU, my ex and my friends that went there, half of your class is married by junior or senior year.
You know, my best friend in high school, who was a minister's kid, very devout Christian, she got married 2 weeks after we graduated high school.
That's bananas. And that's not okay. How's she doing now? Are they still married?
They are not still married. She's remarried.
Okay. And they're both gay. Whatever. It's fine.
The thing about his wife is that Adam is embarrassing to her and her family. They're high up in the church. And back then, if you attacked the Boy Scouts of America, it was like attacking the Mormon church. They were concerned about the optics of this new union.
So this young couple was told, you need to go to therapy and use the money you received from your settlement. In fact, it was framed as immoral to not attend therapy, because otherwise Adam is stealing money.
What about that fucking dude who stole his fucking childhood and stole his fucking innocence? I'm sure that anyone who wins any sum of money, we've been doing the rundown, which we're covering the Diddy and the Karen Reed trial. And Cassie even said, if I could give all of that money back to erase what happened to me, I would give it back. And that was $30 million. I'm sure anybody who has been through a traumatic event where the end result ended in money, I'm sure 99% of them would give them back to not have that traumatic event happen.
Yeah, there's no financial compensation that takes that pain away. And for your new family to weaponize your abuse, it's really, it's just so dark. And so when they went to their bishop to ask for a recommendation for a therapist, they were sent over to Jody Hildebrandt.
And we see this video from Jody Hildebrandt. I don't know what it is, YouTube or whatever fucking media platform put up this nonsense, but here it is.
I am sure you're here because you have a desire to heal, a desire to have joy in your life and connection in your relationships.
So Jody's organization was called Connections. And speaking of connections, she was very connected with the church. The church kind of ushered people to Jody. You know, they had, you know, a list of therapists and they're like, you know, go see her. So then a woman by the name of Lauren Mathias, who is a podcaster. Hey, Lauren, congratulations. She has a podcast called The Hidden True Crime Podcast. Well, she does a lot of reporting on the goings on in Idaho and Utah. And she says that the things that happen around those parts, it's deep, deep secrets. It's like Joey's hookup roster, way deep with secrets and boy's name Steve. I don't know.
Is it a secret if you put it on the internet?
Yeah, no, I guess not.
Lauren gives us some backstory on Jody Hildebrandt. Jody was born into a very large, very tough Mormon family. Her father was a colonel in the Air Force. Her mother was sort of checked out for the most part. And sadly, Jody says that she was also a victim of sexual abuse by some of her own relatives. Mm. But she was also a very ambitious young woman. She was a beauty queen. She was involved in the arts as a performer and a singer. Let me tell you something. Mormons love to sing and dance.
They really do.
They love it.
Yeah, because you know why?
No.
Because they can't fuck. It's in the Bible. Thouth doth nost fucketh, thou shalt do tripleth time steppethists.
Yes. God loveth jazz hands. I think about Paul Kanan when he was cast in Miss Saigon, and he said that he would be sitting while rehearsals were going on in like one of the audience chairs, and he would have his undergarments on underneath his costume, and he would be reading the Mormon Bible because he was so determined, right? And now we know Paul as a very, very different person. But that's the thing. Like, man, religious conditioning, it runs deep. Anyway, eventually Jody got married. She had kids, but her marriage fell apart. And during that time, she decided to pursue educational psychology at the University of Utah.
Now we meet Dr. John Mathias, who I think might be married to Lauren, but they don't say that. He's a forensic psychologist, and he's actually met Jody Hildebrandt at a bunch of trainings and conferences over the years, and he just said she was an attention seeker. This really fucking annoyed me. He explained that Jody was the type of person where if someone was giving a lecture and then they would say any questions, she was the type of person to challenge and say, well, also, or, well, I want to punch people like that in the gullet. I'm too employed for this. I do not have time for people's bullshit who are trying to steal the stage. You know when people do that?
I've seen it in rehearsal a million times.
Oh, my God. They just want to prove how smart they are. As soon as he gave that description, I was like, I know this woman.
Yeah.
She went to work for LDS Family Services, which was the Mormon Church's official therapist group.
LDS Family Services is supposed to be a safe list. So somebody goes to their bishop and says, I need a referral. They're supposed to suggest a therapist that is officially on this list.
And I would imagine it's because they don't want their members going to outside therapists because they run the risk of losing those members through outside influence, right? So Adam Steed, who we met at the top of the episode, he and his wife began seeing Jody. And he says, you know, at first she was really funny and relatable. She was insightful, but mostly she made you feel like you were special because she only worked with the best of the best.
Joey, guess what?
What?
ZBiotics is back. You all, please, you have to listen. This is some kind of miracle. ZBiotics is a pre-alcohol probiotic, and it is a game changer before you're going out. When we're younger, we could go out, we can party to the break of dawn and wake up 2 hours later. Turns out old age doesn't work so much.
Listen, it's pride, okay? I don't have time to be recovering all day because I'm busy being gay. So I make my pre-alcohol the first drink of the night. And of course, you have to drink responsibly, but it keeps me feeling my best tomorrow so I can go out and do more gay things.
This was invented by really, really smart people. We're talking PhD scientists. And it is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It's going to produce an enzyme to break down that toxic byproduct that sits in your gut when you drink. Drink it before you drink, and you will not feel like doo-doo caca the next morning.
You know, this past weekend, I had a little pregame at my house with me and a couple of the boys, and I made them all have a pre-alcohol drink first. And when I tell you, they all texted me the next day saying, thank you. you. And I was like, you're very welcome. And this is gay rights.
Well, Pride is here, but summer is here too. But before that, backyard barbecue brew, glass of Pinot, watching the sunset on the beach, or a cocktail by the campfire, don't forget your Z-Biotics pre-alcohol.
So drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great and ready to take on the next day and all that summer has to offer.
Go to zbiotics.com/think to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use think at checkout.
ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked.
Love that. Remember to head to zbiotics.com/think and use code THINK at checkout for 15% off.
I bought you a pack for Straight Pride Month.
You do not have to be gay to use this product.
Now, a lot of the Mormon therapists upheld their religious beliefs, right? And taught that things like masturbation, porn, was quite literally the same as murder. And Jody also subscribed to that. When he said that, you know, they say it multiple times on this episode. Who are you calling?
The police.
Why are you calling the police?
Because you just said that looking at porn and masturbation is as good as murder, so I was going to call you in.
Oh, okay. How is it shacking up with your boyfriend, huh? Y'all praying at night or what you doing? You swapping gravy. You ain't no better than me.
I'm just saying, I was just going to call the police because I think you might have committed by acts, and I'm going to send people to your house.
Look at me. Can I talk to you back here real quick?
Yeah, what's up?
It's Pride, and I'm allowed to be as gay
as
I want.
Yeah.
And in fact, if you don't turn gay for the month of June, you hate God, because God made me perfect in his image, and God made you somebody who wears pinstripes on a Thursday afternoon.
Hey.
Hi.
I'm recording with Joey, and he just told me since it's Pride, I have to be gay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I only have like 25 days left, but do you want to be gay with me? Because you're like my only gay friend who's a woman.
Well, first of all,
Well, you're queer, but like, can you just do gay stuff with me so that... Does God hate me, or what happens if I'm not gay, Joey?
Oh, God already hates you.
Oh, okay. Can we do scissoring stuff?
First of all, it's really homophobic that I'm the only queer woman you know. Second of all, if you think that I'll scissor you when I told you that I don't want to suck on your titties because they're attached to your body.
Yeah.
You think I want anything to do with your vagina? It's attached to your body. I love you. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, it would be like scissoring we'd be like scissor sisters.
Yeah, that's not cute.
No. So I don't know. You got yourself into this mess. Why is it my responsibility to get you out of it? You know what I mean?
Joey wants to know if you'll scissor him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. You know what? Daisy Egan, everyone. Also, she's not my only queer girlfriend. She's just my only queer podcast partner.
Yeah. But you know, it's crazy. Like, this whole thing is this, I keep having to remind myself that I'm not in this world, right? This world of like insane religious beliefs.
I just want to see that list. They're like, you go to the bishop. Now, I do remember my ex telling me about how uncomfortable it was going to a bishop and going and telling them things. And they would tell them private things. And he's like, it was so mortifying. I can't imagine. They're like, hey, bishop, what's up? I think I need a therapist. Because, God, this is hard. I love looking at titties. I love looking at titties. So I need a therapist.
Yeah.
Oh, my stars.
It's a vicious cycle. But like, that's the thing about Jody, is Jody thought the same way. So it didn't matter who you went to in this network of therapists. You were going to be told that your instinctive thoughts of wanting to have sex or being attracted to someone is a mortal sin.
Mm-hmm.
And if you acted on it, you are a murderer. That's crazy.
That sounds so weird.
I'd be on death row.
Along with the rest of West Hollywood. We meet another client of Jody, and his name is Daniel Choate. That is his actual name. I am not making that up. We meet him in his garage full of food storage. Apparently, that's a Mormon thing. Another thing I didn't know, that they hoard food. I don't know.
I've lived in Utah my whole life. I was married for 15 years. I have 5 kids between the ages of 17 and 7. You know, to put it bluntly, as is common with the male kind, I would look at some porn occasionally, you know, and I was very honest with my wife about it. And it really began to bother her a lot. She said there's no difference between that and having an actual affair.
I feel like anybody who has been on the receiving end of an affair would be like, look at the porn. Look,
yeah.
Please look at the porn. Look at the porn. That's so much better than the other thing that you did.
I would agree. Well, in 2018, Daniel and his wife began seeing Jody, and there was a men's group and there was a women's group, and they would meet on Zoom every Saturday, and everyone there was dealing with the same issue, which is porn. Now, I have my own thoughts on porn, right?
What are your thoughts?
Well, here's the thing. I don't think that there's anything wrong with porn, but I do think that when you cannot separate porn from your actual sex life,
right,
when you treat sex with your partner or with anyone like porn, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And porn, what's bad about that is that porn, you can just fast forward to the part you want to see,
mm-hmm,
right? That's not how sex works. Sex is a journey where you're supposed to connect with your partner, or maybe not, I don't know. But like, it is a journey. You can't just jump to one part. And so for me, I just feel like sometimes porn can sort of create like a dissociative,
sure,
sort of sex,
sure,
right? Where you just treat your partner like you are just a vessel.
Right.
You're not even a person. You know?
I can see that. Well, the important thing to mention is that these men were not addicts. They weren't addicted to porn. We're talking about a guy who would look at a Pornhub thing every couple of months. But Jody called that an addiction. You looked at porn once, you're a sex addict. No, you cannot throw those words around. Sex addiction is very real. It is very disruptive to people's lives, relationships, families. If you look at porn once every couple of months, you are not a sex addict. But that is what she was telling these men. And they're like, okay, well, I guess I'm addicted.
Yeah, it was a tactic. It was a tactic to get everyone in her web, right? And it didn't matter. If you did something that she deemed as wrong, it was a form of addiction. So if you were a hothead, if you had anger issues, you were addicted to drama. I'm like, is that in the American Medical Journal? I don't understand.
If we went by Jody Hildebrandt's rules, I'm addicted to not taking my recycling out because I did that 2 times in a row.
I'm addicted to Call of Duty.
Yeah, you do something once or twice, you need a meeting, everyone. So be warned, there's a lot of meetings coming your way. Jody's theory was that everyone is born with an addiction mindset. I mean, that is kind of true because babies are born addicted to titties. And so babies are sex addicts. There you go. Thanks, Jody Hildebrandt.
Well, then I got over my addiction.
She put us right into her groups, and there was a men's group and a women's group. We had a Zoom meeting once a week on a Saturday, and Jody would head that meeting. Really, everybody was there for the same thing. It was all porn.
And they would check in and, I don't know, talk about titties. I don't know. The goal was to keep them accountable. I don't know what they would say. Like, hello, my name is Bradley. I don't look at my penis. I don't even know what my penis looks anymore. I don't touch it. I don't wash it. I don't wash it because I don't want to touch it because I think that might be masturbation and then I might be an addict. That's how are you doing, Carl? And they would just go around the circle and check in about their lusting for private parts or touching their own dicks. How uncomfortable is that? That is, I mean, the shaming of it all. I mean, we'll get more into shame, but just sitting around and being like, I thought about titties 4 times this week. How about you, Bruce?
Yeah. What she did was took basically the ideas of, say, an AA meeting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And weaponized it, turned it into something dark. And it's really sad because what she was selling was perfection. She wanted everyone, she's like, you can be perfect. Perfection's not an obtainable goal. And therefore, you are setting everyone up for failure. And Daniel says that he had to call other men in the group several times a week, almost like an accountability partner.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone told him that they messed up, but he didn't mention it in group, it was his job to report it for you. The way I would be cussing everyone out. Because then the group's job is to admonish you for your failures. Joey was thinking about dick again. Fuck you, Carl. I thought about dick this morning, too. I thought about your dick, Carl. You want to let's talk about that? Yeah, no, Jody, you opened this can of worms. Every man in this room, I done pictured you naked. Now what's up? Is there therapy for that? Where's that meeting?
And then slowly James in the back is like, I also thought about all your dicks, too. Bigger problem, they're all gay. Just kidding. It's just so embarrassing and ridiculous. So they had all of these meetings. Now, remember, the women were having their separate meetings as well, and none of the men knew what was going on. Looking for some hot stuff, baby, this evening.
Why are you singing that?
It's getting hot outside, and so it's probably hot in your bedroom, so you're probably looking for some temperature-controlled sheets, maybe?
Do you have a solution?
Miracle Made bed sheets are back.
We love Miracle Made sheets because they are temperature-regulating. Like I always say, they are inspired by NASA. And if it's good enough for NASA, it's good enough for me. Just call me Neil Armstrong.
What? You all, I'm going to tell you the gross stuff. You know, traditional bed sheets harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I don't even want to think of all the things that can happen. Acne, allergies, stuffy noses. I don't know. There's more. It's gross. I'm not going to talk about it.
And because Miracle Made sheets are infused with silver, that means they're self-cleaning. And they prevent up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So they stay fresher 3 times longer than other sheets.
Plus, they are luxurious. They are so soft. You're not going to get that high price tag of other luxury brands. I wonder if Miracle Made is single. Sounds like a perfect partner.
So upgrade your sleep as the weather heats up.
Go to trymiracle.com/thinknot to try Miracle Made sheets today.
And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%.
And if you use our promo code THINKNOT at checkout, you'll get a free 3-piece towel set and save an extra 20%.
Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund.
So upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made.
Go to trymiracle.com/thinknot and use the code THINKNOT to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40%.
Again, that's trymiracle.com/thinknot to treat yourself.
Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode and keeping my bed from feeling like the 7th layer of hell at midnight.
Okay.
All right.
Well, one day, Daniel Choate comes home and he sees a list of rules on his bedroom door that's been drafted up by his wife. So we see this reenactment note of this list of rules, and it says in big letters, "These are the boundaries for our bedroom. Rule number one, you are not to sleep in our bedroom until further notice. Number two, you may not enter our bedroom without my permission.
I'm only allowed in our bedroom under her rules. And she had times that I could enter in the morning and times that I could enter in the evening. If I didn't abide by these rules, she let me know that she was going to take the kids and leave."
Mind you, this is the man who looked at porn once.
When he said that, I was like, he's got to be exaggerating. He's got to be.
Mm-hmm.
He was not exaggerating. Also, what therapist has ever said that ultimatums are great? I never, you know, yeah. What in the hell? But like, who influenced his wife to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Jody. This was Jody's doing. Like you said, the men did not know what the discussions were. And they never told us this, but I have a feeling that Jody often discussed what the men were talking about and shared that information with the women to get them riled up, to manipulate them, and ensnare them. And it worked. Because look, I'm all for equal partnership. It's a non-negotiable. But this is not equality. You cannot say you can only come into the bedroom at certain times. I will walk into that bedroom and shit. I will shit in the middle of that bedroom. What's your middle name? I'll write it in piss on the wall. You are not keeping me out of this bedroom. I don't know why I'm single and not married. So a week later, Daniel is like, fuck this. I mean, he followed the rules for a week. But after a week, he was like, fuck this. I'm sleeping in my bedroom tonight, which I can't believe that's a rule. But she said, you have to leave this bedroom or I'm leaving.
Mm-hmm.
With the kids.
So then he said, fine. Please don't do that. I'll go sleep in the guest house. I guess they have guest house in Utah. Who's got a guest house?
I mean, I got a cat litter box.
I didn't even have a guest bedroom until my 30s. The thing of it was, Jody was framing it as if she was empowering these women. Because we've learned from Mormon wives, we know that the Mormon church is highly patriarchal.
Right.
And she was packaging it as, you're reclaiming your power. You're gonna, you know, fight for equality. But what Jody was doing was controlling these people from from both sides. Now, all these men are going along with this idea that they're the devil, which, you know, a lot of men probably are, but not because they touch their penises every once in a while. They're the devil because, you know why? I'm a misandrist. So one day, Daniel is in his guest house. He calls one of his accountability pals and he's like, yeah, I'm in the guest house. I wanted to sleep in my own bed. And then Todd's on the other line and he's like, actually, I'm separated too. Wait, let's three-way Larry and see if Larry's separated. And Larry was separated. Then they conferenced Andrew and then they conferenced Harry and Larry. God, I'm so stupid. Come to find out, all of these men are now separated or sleeping in separate rooms or homes or on the couch. What the fuck is going on?
I'll tell you what's going on. Jody is pitting all of these couples against each other. Now, Adam's wife, she was focused on getting Jody's approval, solely getting Jody's approval. And Adam's father, Paul, pops in to read an email that Adam's wife sent Jody.
These are emails between Jody and Adam's ex-wife. Dear Jody, our conversation this morning reminded me of the scripture when Jesus said, "My sheep hear my voice." I wanted to express my gratitude to you for being his voice in my life. In other words, Jody represents God.
When I read the emails between Jody and my ex now, it sounded like they were talking about like a sexual arousal kind of experience. My ex starts talking to Jody about feeling blood in her, like in her cheeks, and this euphoric feeling, and it feels so good.
What is happening?
So fucking weird.
Well, it gets worse. Adam pops in to say, at this point, he was in a stage with his wife where they weren't allowed to kiss, they weren't allowed to hug, they could barely talk. And Adam is bathing his baby girl when his wife walks into the bathroom in lingerie. And he's like, I'm not gonna lie, I got a boner,
yeah.
Right? We haven't touched, we haven't talked, we haven't kissed. And he's thinking, oh, there's my old wife.
Mm-hmm.
So Adam asks her to take the baby out of the tub. And he's thinking, well, my wife's going to come back in here. She's going to have sex with me. But when she returned, she just looked at him and then looked at his erection with utter disgust and then walked out of the room. And Adam is thinking, what did I do?
Yeah.
And that's how sweet this man is,
yeah,
and innocent. He's not thinking she has an agenda. He's not thinking any of that. He's just like, I must have done something.
Yeah. Shortly after that incident, Adam's wife filed for divorce, but it gets worse. She also filed for an order of protection. And this man, just to kind of echo what you said, he's very soft-spoken and mild-mannered, and he was so confused. And his wife took the kids and disappeared. And the reason he found out for the order of protection was that she explained that my husband has sexual assault in his past and he can't control his sexual urges. And he got an erection while he was in the tub with our daughter. Therefore, I fear that he is a sexual predator. Weaponizing this man's trauma to make him seem evil, that is so, the mental gymnastics you would have to go through just to come up with that plan to just vilify this man who thought he was just gonna have sex with his wife. To your point, they hadn't even touched for so long. And she walks in a Fredericks of Hollywood getup, and he's like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And now he's labeled a predator
by someone he loves,
mm-hmm,
and is supposed to trust, and not just trust in general, but trust with your trauma, with your pain. And then she turned around, weaponized him, and hurt him even more. And Adam says, I would put a bullet to my head before I would ever touch a child inappropriately. And this accusation led to Adam losing his children, and he got 10 days of visitation a month.
Yeah.
Now, eventually, Adam came to believe that the bathroom lingerie thing was a trap, mm-hmm, that both his ex and Jody planned together. And it's not just Adam that this happened to.
Daniel, who got divorced in 2020, he explains that he and his wife started seeing Jody Hildebrandt in 2018. So when he knew that their marriage was over or going downhill, he thought, okay, this doesn't have to be bad.
I thought, you know what would be excellent is if we can get a divorce, have a good co-parenting relationship, and maybe even be friends. Well, my ex-wife texted my sister-in-law. She claimed that I had done something like rape to her, which As far as I'm concerned, that's an allegation of rape. She claimed that I had cheated on her in the marriage, which was not true. She also claimed that I had made some kind of sexual comments about our daughter.
This man is saying this through utter tears. It broke my heart, and he just could barely eke out the words, and he just said, I would never hurt my daughter. So now we have all this information. Why is Jody Hildebrandt doing this to these people?
Especially because her teachings do not follow the Mormon belief system, right? But she's profiting from all of this.
Mm-hmm.
She's making hand over fist with her work. She lived in a multi-million dollar home in Utah, and she had a system in place.
That wasn't a home, by the way. That was a fucking compound. Did you see how big that place was?
That's exactly what I said. It is exorbitant.
Palatial, yeah.
And so what her system was is this. I can cure your husband of his sex addiction. Start with one-on-one therapy, and then she upsells to couples therapy. And then the big bucks are in group support meetings, because if you have up to 20 folks in your group sessions at a time, that's a lot of money. She also sold workbooks and homework material. She had merch. She had, you know, shirts with that stupid connections with an X. Why was it spelled with an X?
Yeah,
probably because all of her clients end up X's. I have no idea.
Oh, good one.
But she also had folks as grandparents dissolving their 401ks with this talk of masturbation is murder sin talk, you know? And in this religion where appearances are everything, most people are willing to give up a lot to maintain those appearances, including their retirement. Also the idea of, I won't see you in the afterlife because you're going to burn in hell because you're a murderer. Let me fork over my 401k to save you. It's really dark.
Does your husband touch his pickle? Well, you're going to burn in hell unless you give me $5,000. It's a scam. It's a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
So now remember Sweet Adam. He had his settlement from the Boy Scouts of America, and it got to the point where Jody Hildebrandt was scamming them.
She was saying, you have to take more sessions with me. Instead of twice a week, it has to be four times a week. We were paying 2.5 times more for Jody than we were paying for all of our living expenses.
Put that into perspective. Let's say an average family's nut is, let's say, $5,000. So they spent their expenses, and Jody cost them $7,500 a month. But they were saving their soul, and they weren't going to burn in the fiery pits of hell. So I guess it's kind of worth it.
And also, Jody was aware of that settlement. She knew mm-hmm. that they got a lot of money, and she was determined to extract it dollar by dollar. And now, because this is a scheme and you want to make more money, the way to do that is to bring in more people.
Joey, guess who's back?
Ooh.
Remy Nightguard.
Do you know that 30% of Americans grind their teeth at night?
I do.
Me too.
They say it's stress from your podcast partner or whatever. I don't know. Go on.
I'd like to read that research, please. Well, if you are one of the 30%, your smile needs protection.
And there is truly no better solution than Remy's custom fit night guard. You all, this is so easy. I love anything that makes my life easy. Now, of course, both dentists and teeth grinders recommend Remy, but I love the convenience. You're going to receive your impression kit straight to your door. You get step-by-step instructions. I am known to misread instructions, and I did this perfectly, I might add. Then you send it back. Don't worry, they give you a self-addressed stamped envelope. It's golden. Then they ship you your custom night guard made in the United States, in Las Vegas to be exact, and you start protecting your teeth. It could not be easier.
And Remy is so confident in their product that they offer a 45-night perfect fit guarantee, or you get your money back.
I love a money back guarantee, and I love anything that makes my life easy. No waiting rooms, no overpriced bills, you know how I hate that. Just a better way to protect your teeth while you sleep.
Try Remy risk-free at shopremy.com/think and use code THINK to get up to 50% off your night guard at checkout.
That's 50% off at shopremi.com/think with code THINK.
Thank you, Remy, for sponsoring this episode and safeguarding my chompers because I can't afford to lose another thing.
Aww.
So now we are in Springville, Utah, and we meet Ruby Frankie. Oh, yes.
The
influencer mom with millions of YouTube followers, also an overachieving Mormon.
Mm-hmm. So Bestie Beth is here, and she's like, let me tell you a little bit about Ruby Frankie. Ruby Frankie, also a devout Mormon, raised in Utah. And her goal was just to look like the picture-perfect Mormon mom. She met her husband, Kevin, when she was 18. And after a couple of weeks, they got married. And then she popped out her first baby at age 21, which is right on track for what we've learned from Secret Wives of Mormon Lives. Mormon Lives? Mormon Wives. I really get tongue-twisted lately.
You doing great, baby.
And then she went on to have 5 more kids. This woman has such a punchable face.
Yep.
Her face just fucking bothers me. Her YouTube channel was all about parenting. It was called 8 Passengers because it was her husband, Kevin, and the kids. And basically her job was to be the perfect Mormon mom and put it all online. Vlogs. What do you do with 6 kids? What are your rules? How do you feed them? How do you discipline them? Now, I could do a whole episode on what that generation of vlog families has sort of done to their kids by putting everything online. I mean, I joke. I used to share pictures of Lola when she was little for shits and giggles, but I sort of looked at it as an online journal. Like, I love looking back at it. Also, I don't have millions of strangers looking at my shit.
You know, and the other thing is, over time, we learned that maybe that's not the best route, you know? So when you know better, you do better. But at the time, they were doing it. I mean, Ruby was like, I'm going to show you how to parent 6 kids the right way. And let me tell you, that's debatable, because this woman would literally chastise her kids on camera and post it. She threatened to chop the head off of one of her daughter's stuffed animals because she was cutting things up around the house. And really, that became the focus of the show, was disciplining her children. And the discipline became, over time, more and more severe.
One of the things Ruby was criticized for was for kicking her son, Chad, out of his own bedroom and forcing him to sleep on a beanbag.
That was 7 months ago. Maybe you need longer without a bedroom.
What?
Well, I mean, I was thinking, you always tell us when you got your door taken away. This kid got his room taken away.
Well, my door didn't get taken away. My brothers broke it because they got into a fist fight and then they never replaced it because everyone in my house had ADHD.
Think about reality TV. Bestie Beth was saying, you know, all the boring housewives get kicked off over time. If you're Ramona Singer and you're a fucking wildebeest on TV, you're going to stay on Real Housewives or Bravo for, I don't know, 20 years, however long it's been on there. So the drama had to come from somewhere. So it was either her husband, or her 6 fucking kids. And guess who won? The kids. It's diabolical.
It is. Well, in 2018, Jody Hildebrandt and Ruby Frankie meet. And of course, they hit it off and become 2 peas in a pod. Now, how did they meet? Well, because Ruby and her husband wanted to put their oldest son in therapy, and Jody jumped at the opportunity because their YouTube channel had millions of followers, and that also means millions of dollars for her. So their son goes to therapy, and then Jody and her husband, Kevin, begin going. But eventually, all of that evolved and progressed into Ruby becoming Jody's right-hand woman.
Yeah, she was like one of Jody's minions. It's so gross.
So in 2022, Ruby is on YouTube, but not with her family. No, no. She has a new co-star, and it is Jody Hildebrandt, and they've begun a new channel called Moms of Truth.
Oh, they renamed it.
Oh, what is it?
2 cunts in really ill-fitting clothing. Yeah, you saw it on the bottom. It was just like scratched out.
Wow.
Yeah.
That'll make for interesting merch.
Yeah. They were sponsored by Kohl's.
Brought to you by Chick-fil-A. Happy Pride.
Ruby sort of worked under Jody, if you know what I mean. Foreshadowing. She called herself, what did she call herself? Some kind of mental health fitness instructor? I don't know. Well, to make this whole story more wild and more inappropriate, Jody moved in with Ruby. What was that conversation like with her husband? She's like, hey, babe, I was thinking pork chops for dinner. Also, do you know my therapist? She's gonna come stay with us.
I don't want my therapist seeing the ins and outs of my house.
Rachel would be like, we need to meet twice a week. Minimum twice a week. I didn't know it was this bad, Joey.
She's like, it's an episode of Queer as Folk in here, and not in a good way. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. So like you said, in 2021, Jody moved in, and Kevin says the minute that bitch moved in, things took a very weird turn.
Jody starts seeing some shadowy figures or visiting her at night or after her. Jody then starts asking Kevin Frankie to help her perform exorcisms.
It was weird, and I hated it.
And I don't have any way to explain it other than there's some crazy going on.
So is the Babadook in the house, or is the Babadook actually Jody trying to manipulate the Frankies? It's insane.
Right. And poor Kevin didn't know what was going on. He's thinking, is this an act? Is she just looking for attention? And so then, poor thing, Jody was having trouble sleeping. And Ruby would have to wake up every couple of hours to check on Jody. Every 4 hours, every 2 hours. And then Ruby's like, you know what? I'm just gonna stay in here with Jody. Totally normal. It's totally normal. I'm sleeping in the same bed as my therapist. Girl talk. She just needs a cuddle buddy.
Girl, the only thing of Jody's that was haunted was her clitoris, and she wanted Ruby to exercise it with her tongue so that she could go, this house is clean. Now, all of this leads to Ruby and her kids eventually moving in with Jody in Utah.
No. I just want to take a moment to recognize the hypocrisy, because by day, Jody Hildebrandt is teaching this man that if they make the bald man cry, they're going to burn in hell. But you're over here sleeping in bed, probably doing the Scissor Sister showdown every night with Ruby Frankie. You're clearly a closeted lesbian, or you have whatever your history is. I don't know. I don't care. So is that in the Bible? Are you allowed to scissor your clients at night, but then chastise men for touching their cucumber every once in a while?
It's very strange, because they only infer that the two women had a sexual relationship on the episode. They never really say it, and they've never come out and said it.
No, they found out from Ruby's journals.
That they were having sex?
Oh, yeah. What do you think they were doing? Telling ghost stories and braiding each other's hair? Yes, they took a dive down to the Pink Clam Store. They were clicking those beans. You know, we could do it all night. That's the thing. We just do it over and over and over again. We never get tired.
You're saying so much for me to process in real time. I might need to have Rachel move into this house with me, because I'm trying to grapple with everything you're saying. Jody really said, Pink Pony Club. I'm gonna keep on scissoring at the Pink Pony Club. Anyway, so y'all, we're making jokes because it's about to get darker.
They know, Joseph.
I know, but I just need to say it for me.
For me!
So we fast forward to August 30th, 2023, and we hear a 911 call.
911, tell me exactly what's happened.
I just had a 12-year-old boy show up here at my front door asking for help. And he said he had just came from a neighbor's house. He's emaciated, he's hungry, and he's thirsty. And he asked us to call the police. So he's very afraid. He has duct tape around each ankle. And he has them around his wrist as well. Okay, this boy has been... he's been detained. What's your mom's name?
Ruby
Frankie. Ruby Frankie is his mom's name. He says... what's happened to him is his fault.
They're coming to you as quick as they can, okay?
Okay. Jody Hildebrandt is up there right now.
Okay.
She's a bad lady. We didn't realize how bad.
Bad lady is the understatement of the year.
You know, I remember seeing this on TikTok, and it really broke my heart, truly.
Out of that whole thing, I know this sounds crazy because it kind of just gets worse and worse. And if you know this case, you've probably seen the pictures of the duct tape and their ankles and their wrists. There's something about him saying that he was hungry and thirsty.
Yeah.
How could you... I don't know. That's not the worst part, but for some reason, just thinking of a little kid who is not in any kind of financial hardship, there is probably a refrigerator full of food that they are not getting. I don't know. Hungry and thirsty really got me.
I had to take a break.
Yeah.
Because they're just sweet little innocent babies that are looking to you for love and help and safety. Well, we meet the officer who responded to that 911 call. It's Officer Simon Pickovit. And immediately he could see that this sweet little boy was emaciated. And he says, I was extremely emotional when I saw the wounds this boy had on his body. And what made it even more heartbreaking was that this little boy is looking up at him like this is his fault, mm-hmm. as if he were in trouble. And when asked, who did this to you? He said, his mother, Ruby Frankie, and Jody Hildebrandt did this.
Fucking animals. Well, they go to Jody Hildebrandt's compound, and they go to the door, and she's like, no, no, I'm not stepping out. I was like, bitch, you're given a lawful order. You're not above the law just because you live in this $5 million home, and she's saying she has her lawyer on the phone. Great, come out of the house, because I just gave you a fucking order, you child abuser, and then you can talk on the phone. I love it when people think that because they have money, they're above the law. Diddy, case in point, baby, your orange looks just like that guy's orange over there. The law does not care how much fucking money you have. Well, not always, but in this case, bitch, you're going to jail.
Oh, yeah. They grabbed her and yeeted her out of that house.
Yeah.
And then they bring her to the station for questioning. And we meet Officer Jessica Bate, who interviewed her.
If we ask you any questions that you don't want to answer, you can just tell us, I don't want to answer that question.
So I trust my attorney. He said, don't say anything. And I said, I have nothing to hide. And he's like, I know that. I don't know what's going to happen with what I say. You know, I'm a psychologist. I've watched people flip things all the time. If you knew all the pieces, I think you'd have a lot of empathy for what's going on.
So this story hits the news. Adam Steed said, I woke up at 4 a.m., saw the news, read Jody's name, and I was in utter shock. But of course, this, for him, was in line with Jody. And when a producer asks Adam, what would you say to Jody if she was here right now? He says this.
Burn in hell.
Yeah, I think she had that coming.
If someone like that fucked with someone that I loved, if Adam were my friend and I knew that he went through some kind of trauma and it was weaponized like that and his whole world was taken, bitch, Jody Hildebrandt would be meeting my fucking knuckle biscuits. Okay?
For real.
I just feel, I did the rage, this poor man and those poor babies. She's a fucking monster. Well, Ruby Frankie was arrested as well, and she's brought in for questioning. This interview, I remember seeing this.
Same.
And I forgot how fucking creepy it is. We'll play the interview for you. Actually, Rick, play the interview.
We're just here to talk to you about kind of a few things involving your kids. So first, do you live down here or?
I was just trying to build a rapport, get to know her. And she just stared and was giving these long blinks like she was in a trance. It was very different, odd, not normal behavior.
She's catatonic, you all. I'm sure a lot of you have seen this. What do you think is wrong with her?
I think she completely dissociated. I think she checked out. I think that there were two things going on in her head at the same time that were at war. I think the truth of what she had done, the reality of what she had done versus the justification were at war in her head. But also, she's no dummy. She knew, I can't say a thing until a lawyer gets here because anything I say will be used against me.
Right, but she's not saying no comment or I plead the fifth. She is just staring, eyes wide open, not moving, barely blinking. She's like a statue.
I wouldn't be surprised if they were using drugs.
Yeah, that's a great point. They also, of course, have to have a sit down with Kevin, Ruby's husband. Kevin has no fucking clue what they're talking about. He hasn't been allowed to see his children for a year. And he's like, remember, I looked at porn that one time. I'm on the addicted to porn list. I'm trying to get right with the Lord. So Kevin knew nothing. Now, there are a lot of people who insist that Kevin had to have known what was going on. I disagree.
I do too.
I hope I'm right. But I think that Jody was so skilled. She was so masterful in her manipulation. And with those kids, I do believe that she would have the power and some kind of a strategy to keep that from Kevin. This man didn't see his kids for a year.
And he agreed that he didn't deserve to see them because Jody told him he had a sex addiction. Yeah. And he was like, you're right. I agree. He is just as brainwashed as Ruby.
Yeah.
And I want to say, in Ruby's case, that is not an excuse. I'm not excusing her behavior at all. But they fully drank the Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
So they show this interview that Kevin gave to the police, to Adam Steed, right? Who's the guy that we met at the top of the episode. And he was like, you know what? I was there. Mm-hmm. I went through this, and I actually feel bad for him. But in 5 years, he will see the truth. He will not be talking like this still.
Yeah.
But in the rest of the interview, Kevin Frankie's like, this all sounds made up. Like, he cannot wrap his head around it. He's like, I feel like you're talking about, like, a horror film or something. And just like Ruby, who was not in the mental place to face reality, he was not in the place where he could comprehend what was going on and what it meant for his own life.
Yeah. Well, authorities went and searched Jody Hildebrandt's 9,000 square foot house. And during that search, they found Ruby's journal. And Bestie Beth reads some of it to us.
Ruby's diary, July 11, 2023, long before she's arrested. Big day for evil. R, or I should say his demon, stays in the shade. I push R into the sun. I come back with a cactus poker. When I poke his back to get his attention, R doesn't even flinch. He's in a trance and doesn't appear to feel anything.
This whole thing with getting the devil out, did you follow the Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell case?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But for her to put pen to paper and talk about her kids that way, it feels like exactly like Kevin. It feels like a movie, getting the devil out of your child. Well, Ruby Frankie and Jody are both arrested. Ruby makes a call from jail from Purgatory Correctional Facility, otherwise known as You Are Indeed Going to Hell.
Yep.
I'm going to purgatory. No, really, where are you going? No, seriously, I'm going to purgatory. No, I get that. I'm not talking about your afterlife. No, I'm going to Purgatory Correctional Facility.
But don't worry, my Aunt Debbie's there because she watched Murder, She Wrote, and I'm pretty sure that's a sin. So then we hear a phone call from prison that Ruby Frankie made only 2 days after her arrest.
Adults have a really hard time understanding that children can be full of evil and what that takes to fight it. The most upsetting thing is that I am completely misunderstood. Like, my own family misunderstands me, they misinterpret me. And poor Jody, she puts her neck out on the line for people and then they get mad at her. I mean, it is just horrendous.
This woman is insane. And the fact that she's defending Jody tells me how deeply brainwashed she is.
When she said poor Jody, I screamed, poor Jody?
Fuck Jody.
Poor Jody. Not those babies that were beaten, hungry, thirsty. Poor Jody? Jody's doing fine. Methinks a closeted lesbian in jail is doing just fine. JK, I'm sure those two get their asses beat on the daily, and I hope they do.
Me too.
I got yelled at for saying that once. I don't care.
Well, then we hear the rest of the phone call.
We didn't do that. We didn't do that. Those pictures we did not do. He did that to himself, yes. Did we put that on him and then he rubbed around and cut himself? Yes. But we didn't do that. I'm a good woman. I don't do naughty things. I'm a really good girl.
I think that eventually the reality of the situation hit Jody a bit more, and she had sort of a change of heart. Listen to this call she made a few months after her arrest.
This has been the strangest and the most miraculous intervention. It put everybody where they needed to be. It separated me from Jody, so I'm not hearing her. And I think just not hearing her has cleared a lot of things up for me.
Now, none of this, again, is an excuse. I cannot emphasize that enough. But it became very clear through Ruby's journal entries just how much Jody had taken residence in her mind, in the way that she saw the world and her children. The truth is that Jody was a mastermind in control. She knew how to manipulate folks through their religious beliefs and also push her agenda at the same time. She was the wise one. She knew the truth. She could see you out of your sin. She was a cult leader who said, God is speaking through me, and people gobbled it up.
Yeah.
You know?
People like that are able to identify and then prey on the vulnerabilities of people, because they said in the episode that Ruby really had a love deficit. She didn't feel loved. Everyone wants to feel loved and accepted. If you're weak of mind and soul and spirit and you're down, that's when they come and get you. I mean, that is why Mormons generally go on missions to third world countries.
Yeah.
Because they try and find people who are living in poverty environments. They're trying to find people who are struggling, who might be suffering from substance use disorder. Those are the vulnerabilities that those kinds of people go in. They pry their way in and then they set up shop and that's where they live. I don't feel bad for Ruby, but I can say that victims often turn into perps. It's a cycle.
Jody was also really good at isolating people. You know, right before the arrest, Jody and Ruby were looking for a ranch in a remote part of Arizona. And if they had moved to Arizona, Ruby's children would most likely have died. And even from prison, Jody is still peddling her nonsense.
The Lord says, "And ye shall be betrayed by brethren and kinsfolk and friends. Children shall rise up against their parents and shall cause them to be put to death." That statement right there is what's going on with me.
Now, both Ruby and Jody pled guilty as part of their plea, which was to drop 2 of the 6 aggravated child abuse charges.
This is why I couldn't be a judge, because if someone said guilty, Your Honor, I'd be like, no shit. And they'd be like, ma'am, take off your robe, step down off the bench. That's why I am where I am.
The Honorable Judge Ellen Marsh, please rise, everyone. She's coming in, and you just come in like a sequined, like
a sequined black cloak. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
With like a headpiece. And I'm like, hello, sir. What do you have to say? Guilty. You look disgusting. Go floss your teeth. Next. They're like, no, you didn't hear that. I'm like, no, I know. I know. I can tell. You heard children? Okay, 10,000 years. No, no, Ellen, the maximum sentence is 20. Oh, well, now it's 10,000, so.
Now somebody bring me my IQ mix. I'm thirsty.
Did you get the new mango?
I did. It's delicious. It's now, so okay. In the meantime, Jody ruined a lot of people's marriages and essentially their lives. Now, Adam, after everything this man has been through, has managed to maintain a sense of optimism.
No.
Which is not easy.
No.
Not easy. But he remarried, they had a baby, mm-hmm. and he's so happy. And Daniel Choate says, if I could say anything to Jody, it would be, you done fucked up. Those are literally his words. You done fucked up, and may God have mercy on your soul when you finally wake up and realize what you've done.
That's really hard for a Mormon to curse. What do you have to say? Whoa, she's a heckin' bad person. Oh, heck.
Well, he's not a Mormon anymore.
I know.
Like all cult leaders, whether it's L. Ron Hubbard or Keith Raniere or Jody Hildebrand, they always mix in sort of pop psychology, New Age doctrine or theology with some of their own particular practices.
When I hear that she thinks God is speaking through her, I think, what a narcissist.
And that's where the episode ends. I feel like you can speak to this more just because I grew up with religion in my life, but not like you did. But that whole essence of guilt and shame, because shame is such a powerful emotion. I think it's one of the most powerful emotions a human can experience. And I just feel like people in a lot of religions, not all, a lot of religions, I can't speak to Catholicism and Christianity, but I feel like there is some part of really, you know, far out religion that they just inundate people with shame about their bodies or their identities or their beliefs. And it seems like, obviously, people like Jody Hildebrand, cult leaders like that, and higher ups in certain churches, I just feel like they have a personal interest in manipulating people. It doesn't really seem like God at all. I feel like they worship money more than they worship God. What do you feel about like how sort of like shame and all that stuff like came into your life?
Well, I think someone like Jody is really good at what she does because she's a psychologist, right? She studied psychology and she understands that shame and guilt are two very powerful emotions that are used as mechanisms to manipulate people. It's the easiest way. Fear, guilt, shame, right? And it's really sad because, you know, I try really hard not to make broad sweeping statements about anyone. Although I feel like if you are a homophobe, you're probably a closeted gay person because why do you care so much?
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you're fortunate enough to remove yourself from a situation like something under with Jody, the after effects stay with you for a really long time.
Yeah.
And it's a different kind of shame. Right? Because shame over having these natural desires, you know, lusting or masturbation. And then once you are able to wrangle that and be like, yeah, it's not a bad thing, right? Those are natural things.
Yeah.
But then now you're wrestling with the shame of your past experience. How could I be involved with someone like that? How could I let myself? It's a never-ending cycle. And my prayer is for anyone who's been swept up in that is that they show themselves grace mm-hmm. and that they find a legitimate therapist who will also show them kindness and grace and allow them to move through that. Because everyone deserves to be free of those kinds of feelings that really don't serve you. Mm-hmm. Fear for me is something that I really lean into because most of the time I realize I didn't have anything to be afraid of and I grow from it. Shame, you and I have talked at length about shame and what that does and trying to emancipate yourself from that feeling so that you can live a freer life. Guilt. I felt guilt over shit that had nothing to do with me, mm-hmm. you know?
Oh, those poor babies. Well, Jody Hildebrandt and Ruby Frankie both received 4 separate prison sentences for 1 to 15 years, which will run consecutively. Now, when you add all that up, that would be a 60-year maximum sentence. But the most severe penalty under Utah law is 30 years. So the most that they will serve is 30 years.
Got it.
I hope they serve every day of it.
Me too. Ruby Frankie's daughter, Sherry Frankie, wrote a memoir. Mm-hmm. Did you see that?
Yeah.
It's called The House of My Mother, A Daughter's Quest for Freedom. And basically, she goes on and says that her mom's punishments were already twisted. But when Jody entered the picture, they became sadistic. And she attempted to report the abuse to the authorities for years with no success. She also says she's trying to like build her relationship with her father and her siblings. But one of the things that she said that really stuck with me was that she says, sometimes I look in the mirror and I see my mother. I look like her, I talk like her, but I don't want to be anything like her.
Yeah, I don't blame her. Her eldest son is also really active on social media, talking yeah. about what his life is like. I hope those kids are able to somehow move past it and, you know, have just beautiful lives on their own. I mean, their lives are all on the internet for forever. It doesn't matter if the YouTube channel is taken down. All that stuff lives there. And all of that privacy of being young and having a camera in their face. And it was monetized. They were making a ton of money. And knowing that you're the bread and butter for your family, it's just fucking awful. I truly hope yeah. they serve every day of their total sentence. And you have to believe in a women's prison, 2 women who have hurt children like that. I feel like the tough ladies in purgatory are not going to show them any grace. I don't think they're getting any extra jello anytime soon. Say something funny.
All I keep thinking about is those group meetings where people are like, well, I thought about a titty, just 1 titty today, not even 2, just 1 titty. I saw a titty in my mind. I'm so sorry. I've been like, I saw dicks and balls. I watched a baseball game and I imagined every baseball player naked showering next to each other. Somebody dropped the soap in my mind. Also, there was Cher playing in the background. I saw glitter.
I've turned this into a reality. Can we mute Joey on this meeting? What's the mute? Is there a mute button? Oh, down bitches. Those 2 fucking monsters. You know what? Joey and I decided there's only 1 more episode in this whole series. So even though we normally only do 4 episodes, we're going to do the 5th. We like it. And why leave it out? Right, Joey?
Well, it's about a cat cult. And anything with cats, I'm in it. I hope if they hurt those cats, I'll be real mad.
Dumb bitches, don't forget to come and see our live show. Also, if you're looking for a little bit more of us, join us on the Patreon, www.patreon.com/...
The W's. The W's.
Slash I think not. And hey, if you are bored one day and you feel like heading over to Spotify, Apple, Amazon, whatever, and leaving us a 5-star review and say something nice, we sure would appreciate it.
And follow us on all social media platforms at I think not pod. You can also join our Facebook group, which is a great way to keep up to date on all of our announcements and to connect with other DBs. That is the I Think Not Podcast Facebook discussion group. And that's it. That's all I got to say.
And I will be posting all of Joey's nudes every Tuesday morning moving forward. Until next time, I love you, Joey.
I love you too, Yellow Marie Martian. I love you, DB Simic.
I love you down, bitches.
Bye. I thought of a penis.
His name's Adam. Is it Paula?
Paul. Paula.
I wrote Paula.
His name is Adam Paula Abdul. I thought you were doing a bit and I was trying to yes and that shit.
No,
you were,
I really wasn't.
And the truth is that Judy? No, leave Judy Garland alone.
Joey's theory was that everyone is born.
Joey's theory? I never had no theory. Wow. You know what? I got problems.
Mm-hmm.
I do this for a living. Okay.